It is lovely to be here with you this morning as Reverend Liz goes off to take some well-deserved rest. I was prompted to think about a quote from Brené Brown who says, "It takes real courage to say yes to rest in a culture where exhaustion is often a status symbol." And so we can be grateful to Reverend Liz for her courageous role modeling this morning as we reflect together on the importance of rest, both as celebration and as a form of resistance. My reflection this morning has three parts: a little midrash on the Genesis creation story, a reflection on Sabbath, and then a reflection on sort of Sabbath as resistance and why it would still be relevant today. So, the story. After 6 days of effort, sorting out chaos and ordering it to make the day and the night, the lands and the seas, the plants and the animals and all of the people, God woke up and looked around. It was the seventh day, and creation was pretty much complete. So what was God going to do now? Well, the Jewish and Christian translations of the Genesis story agree that on the seventh day, God rested. Or more precisely, God rested, God blessed the seventh day, and hallowed it. God did not keep working. God did not check email. God did not go online and watch kitten videos. God didn't sleep in. God didn't do nothing. God didn't plug in to reboot so that God could do more on the eighth day. No, God did something very specific. God rested. God blessed the day and hallowed it. And to hallow something means to set it aside, to make it holy. So, if we think about it, resting and blessing, which I translate as meaning sharing your life energy with something, and hallowing, setting something aside to make it holy, are all connected. They're all woven together. They're all part of the same thing. At the end of the sixth day, God looked at the work of the last 6 days and asked God's self, "Is it good?" And God decided that it was good, and that the world was a keeper, and that God was pleased with it, so pleased, in fact, that God needed to share God's delight in this world that God had made. And so on the morning of the seventh day, God got up and decided not to change a single thing, but rather to rest and enjoy what God had already created. So God set that aside as something special and invested all kinds of God's energy in that day, God's life-giving energy. And in my imagination, that translates to God wanting to throw a party. Yeah, God wanted to throw a party on the seventh day. And God invited all creations to stop whatever they were doing and join in God's celebration. And because God was God, and God had filled the day with life energy, there was food for everyone, there was lots of greeting and hugging as all the creatures in creation showed up, along with all of the angels and the sun and the moon and the stars. And they sang, and they admired creation. And they said, "Thank you, thank you, thank you," hundreds and hundreds of times. And God told the angels and Adam and Eve the story about the first 6 days and what it was like to actually separate the light and the dark, the land and the water, what it was like to put the sun and the moon and the stars up there in the sky. And everyone marveled. And then they wanted each of them to hear about their own creation. What was it like when you made me, God? And so God told them. And after that, the creatures all told each other about what it had been like and what they'd been doing in the days since God had made them. And after sharing stories and eating some more, everyone danced and played and had fun. And when they got tired, they settled in for a long, lazy Sabbath afternoon nap. And as the day drew to a close, there was more food, and the angels traded recipes for manna and milk and honey. And the sun set, and the moon rose, and the stars came out. And everyone delighted in the beauty and the wonder and the glory of it all and said how lucky they were to be there. That was the first Sabbath in the Garden of Eden. Now later on, some of Adam and Eve's descendants decided that that first Sabbath was so important that they ought to recreate it every week, and God agreed, but by then things had gotten complicated in the world outside of Eden. And they had to create all sorts of rules and traditions, even to make an echo of that first Sabbath. But even that echo has inspired people for generations. That first Sabbath, though, it was perfect. A moment set aside after all the work was done, when the Creator and everything in creation came together to enjoy being alive in the world. Friends, how often do you take a Sabbath? How often do you rest according to this Genesis recipe? How often do you set aside time, a day, an hour, and fill it with your life energy in such a way that you can experience and savor all the things you've been working for, your home, your family, your friends, your community, good food, beautiful music, dance, art, natural world, all those things that make your life worth living. When was the last time you consciously blessed someone or something? Now, even knowing a little bit about this community, you've probably blessed someone pretty recently. But etymologically, the word to bless means to make something holy by anointing it with your lifeblood. Or less violently, to make something holy by sharing your life energy with it. Think of giving someone or something your full attention, your presence, your expertise, your compassion. What and who do you bless in your life? And how often are you intentional in the blessing? And when was the last time you set something aside and hallowed it? Made it special, made it sacred. We often set things aside to make them special. Birthdays and holidays, certainly. And even the weekend is hallowed in a sort of way, set aside for something other than whatever your day-to-day projects and occupations are. So what is it that you hallow? And more importantly, who rests with you in these times and spaces that you have chosen to be holy? Who's there to dance and nap and eat and dream and enjoy this moment with you? You know, instead of asking you how often you rest, I could just ask you how often do you really live, rather than rushing around and ticking the things off of your list and organizing and ordering things and making them and maintaining them, or alternatively distracting yourself from all those things that you haven't quite gotten done. How often do you pause long enough with the people you love? How often do you pause long enough to know that you and they and the moment are not merely enough, they are more than enough. They are very, very good. Now, Walter Brueggemann, Would you hand me the two books over there? I always like to hold up the books that I'm drawing on when I'm speaking for something. So Walter Brueggemann is a Christian theologian. He has a book titled Sabbath as Resistance, Saying No to the Culture of Now. That's one of the books that informs my thought here. The other one is by Tricia Hershey, the founder of the Knapp Ministry. Her book is called The Knapp Ministry. Google her. She's called the Bishop of Knapps. It's called Rest is Resistance, a Manifesto. So when we're thinking about rest as resistance, Brueggemann has this to say. It is for good reason that enlightenment-based autonomous Christians may find the Sabbath commandment the most urgent and difficult of all of those Ten Commandments at Sinai. We are, liberals and conservatives, much inured to the Pharaoh's system. And for that reason, departure into restfulness is both urgent and difficult, for our motors are set to run at the speed of making bricks. To cease, even for a little time, our anxious striving for more bricks is to find ourselves with a light burden and an easy yoke. It is now as then, enough to permit dancing and singing into an alternative life. When we're talking about rest and the idea of Sabbath, it's important to remember that biblically, we hear again about Sabbath in the context of Pharaoh's Egypt and the Hebrew people's enslavement. The God that Brueggemann calls the God who rests comes to the fore in the moment when the Hebrew people are being forced to fulfill their quota of bricks without being given straw to make the bricks with. You know, this is making adobe. You've got to have straw to make your adobe. And so they were to go out and glean in the fields after their work hours were over in order to make an increased quota. It was an incredibly unjust system. And somehow, not only did they manage to do it, they managed to set aside the time for the Sabbath in the middle of all that. That was a deeply countercultural gesture in a time and place when everything around them was intent on using every ounce of their intention and energy to create a prophet or to build a monument to the Pharaoh. So it's not only an ancient way of resisting, it's also a way we can resist. When we take time outside of the secular culture, outside of capitalism and white supremacy and patriarchy and the digital metaverse, and reclaim who we are and focus on community and compassion and the things that we've been given to know about the beauty of the world. It's a way of reclaiming our humanness every seventh. It's kind of interesting, in the Exodus narrative, observation of the Sabbath is the fourth of the commandments that Moses brings down from the mountain. It's after the three commandments that tell you who God is and what you owe to God, and before the commandments telling people how to treat their neighbors. And so the idea is that the Sabbath is a gift that flows from the God who rests and then enables us to be good neighbors to one another and the rest of the world. Really importantly, it's not just for the priests. It's not for the generals or the men or the chosen people of Israel. It's meant for all of us. It explicitly includes servants and slaves and widows and orphans and outsiders. It even is explicitly inclusive of animals and the natural world. The Sabbath is for everyone. It's a time set apart from the injustice and inequality that permeate the social order the other 6 days of the week. Now, it's very, very clear in Jewish Midrash and in Christian teaching that the Sabbath cannot be taken by some on the backs of the labor and suffering of others. Understanding that Sabbath is this taste of equality in a world that has a hard time imagining what equality would look like. No wonder the African American community has found the idea so powerful from slavery times through civil rights to the present moment. Sabbath offers refuge and rest and a community where injustice is momentarily set aside, a beloved community which is experienced in the moment and in which resistance can be organized. Now, I love the idea that Sabbath rest is a countercultural form of resistance. I find that it gives me permission to rest. And sometimes it feels like resting is indulgent, self-indulgent, or frivolous, and I really should be being productive. But this notion that rest is a counterbalance to the productivity push, which is everywhere in our time and place, is something profoundly healing. So what to do? How do we resist the distractions and too busyness and the not enoughness? How do we find our way back to the it is goodness of our lives? I think the instructions are there, friends. We practice Sabbath. We begin by remembering and telling the stories, and we hallow our time by setting aside and gathering with our beloveds to savor life. And we share our energy and our love, our talents and our care. And today, together, we celebrate the gifts of creation exactly as we are, and we say thank you. And then we do it again next week. And each time we look at our world and echo God's words and say, it is good, we bless the world. It is good. We bless the world and we hallow it. And for a moment, we step into that alternative reality, the beloved community. If resting in community, friends, is a way to resist capitalism and the digital metaverse, if it can help us resist the urgency and perfectionism that characterizes white supremacy culture, if it can help us live more fully and vibrantly, if it can inspire us to create more opportunities for more people to gather with us and have that same experience, so much the better. In a very real way, isn't that what this community is about? The creation of heaven on earth? The coming of the kingdom of God? The embrace of the beloved community? Call it whatever you will. In the here and now. In this present moment. Look around, friends. Notice your friends and beloveds here. Notice the gifts that have been shared in this time you have set apart for our being together, this time that you have hallowed and blessed. Let us enjoy this moment, my friends, and let us say together, it is good. It is good.
When we woke up, the world was figured out beyond just old ghosts that we grow attached to. The tragic flaws that they hide the truth. That you're enough, you're enough, you're enough. I promise you're enough, you're enough, you're enough. I promise you're enough, you're enough, you're enough. I promise you. You're enough, you're enough, you're enough. These little